Welcome to the Divorce Podcast, where we explore all aspects of ending relationships, separation, and parenting apart. If your marriage or partnership has ended, or you have friends and family who are separating, this podcast is for you. I'm Kate Daly, a relationship counsellor, divorce specialist, and co-founder of Amicable, the online legal service for separating couples. In each episode, we look at relationships and separation from different angles, including the emotional, legal, and social. I'm joined by experts and special guests who share their own unique stories, experience, and tips with the goal of helping people end relationships in a kinder and better way. In this episode, I was joined by Nadia Beckett, who has been a family law solicitor for 30 years, practicing in Kent and London, and established Beckett Solicitors in 2008. She specialises in sorting out finances and children issues as part of a divorce. Nadia has been a mediator since 1997 and a family law arbitrator since 2013. She's dual qualified as a financial and children arbitrator and co-chairs the executive committee of the Institute of Family Law Arbitrators, known as IFLA. She also sits on their rules committee and chairs the Forum of Family Law Arbitrators. This episode is all about arbitration as an alternative route to resolving disputes during a divorce or separation. We begin with the basics, looking at what arbitration is and how it differs from going through court. We explore when you might want to use arbitration, as well as how to find an arbitrator. Nadia outlines the arbitration process, including how long it takes to reach a decision and how an arbitrator's determination will need to be written into a consent order if the decision is around finances. I was interested to learn that arbitration can be used for cohabiting couples too in their disputes over property. We finish by exploring the advantages and the barriers to arbitration. If you can't reach an agreement amicably, it's clear arbitration is a great option to avoid expensive and litigious court proceedings. If you loved this episode, then please subscribe and rate us on your preferred listening platform. Welcome, Nadia. I'm really excited to talk to you about arbitration because it's something that's quite difficult, I think. Not many people understand what it is. It's not very well known. And yet, to me, it's such a no-brainer if you get to the point of no return and not being able to negotiate your way out of a dispute. So I'm really excited to hear about it all today. So let's start with the basics then, Nadia. What is arbitration?
Arbitration is, well, we call it ADR, alternative dispute resolution, in the same way that mediation is alternative dispute resolution. But then what does that mean? That means it's an alternative to going to court. Getting divorced, particularly getting divorced and separating out your finances, is a legal process. And it has to be dealt with ultimately in a legal way. But how you get to the point at which the assets are divided, who makes that decision for you, whether you're able to agree it in mediation or negotiate or working with specialists such as you, Kate, there has to be a process to get to that final decision as to how the assets are going to be shared or how time with the children is going to be shared. And arbitration is just one of the many routes to that outcome. And the easiest way to describe arbitration is to say it's like hiring a private judge. So an arbitrator is essentially a hired judge, someone that you pay to make the decision for you.
Okay. So instead of both of the people in the couple sitting round and trying to agree it themselves, you have that process where you say, okay, we're going to hand the decision over to somebody else. But instead of that being a judge in a court, it's somebody you've hired together to sort out your dispute. So that's then right. That I guess that begs the question, what's the difference between going to court and using an arbitrator or a private judge as you've described?
So an arbitrator is specially qualified, specially trained lawyer. We all have to have many years, at least 10 years of being family law practitioners under our belts with hundreds and hundreds of hours of experience. And we are qualified under the IFLA Institute of Family Law Arbitrators scheme. And so some arbitrators are actually part-time judges and some are retired judges. many are barristers. Probably the largest proportion are specialist family law barristers, and a smaller proportion are family law solicitors. So we cover those three areas, if you like. A full-time judge cannot be an arbitrator, so it has to be part-time or retired. And the difference is that instead of having your case heard by a judge in court, which can involve a lot of, it's a very formal process in court. There are rules of court that have to be followed. Judges don't help you. They're not there to help you if you're not represented. They're not there to tell you what to do. You absolutely cannot communicate directly with a judge. So it's funny, sometimes, particularly when people are unrepresented, they send emails to the court addressed to the judge, thinking that the judge will read their emails. Generally, a judge won't read their emails. And the other thing about a judge is you don't get to choose your judge. So you get who you're given. When you arbitrate, first of all, you get to pick the arbitrator. So you can look at the arbitrator's qualifications, arbitrator's reviews. You can look at the arbitrator's expertise. And you with your former spouse or husband, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, you get to choose the arbitrators. You can do that by going to the IFLA website, where all the properly qualified arbitrators for England and Wales are. So you get to choose the arbitrator, but you don't get to choose your judge. Your meetings with the arbitrator. So if you're in court, you'd have court hearings. With arbitration, you have a meeting with the arbitrator, and that could be on Zoom, it could be by telephone, or it could be in person. And those meetings are arranged for a time and a date that's convenient to you, not convenient to the court. That's another big thing. The court rarely takes your convenience into consideration when it lists hearings. What the arbitrator is being asked to decide, again, you as a couple, a separating couple, you agree on what you are asking the arbitrator to decide. That isn't really how court works. So, and that's kind of quite a big area, but essentially you can't say to a judge, well, we really just want you to look at pensions and we don't want you to look at the house. That isn't really how court works. When you're asking a judge to look at the division of your assets, you can't opt things out and say to the judge, no, we've agreed, we're not looking at pensions. Which you can do that with the arbitrator. You can agree what the arbitrator looks at and what the arbitrator is excluding. You can also say to the arbitrator, well, we've actually reached an agreement on this one issue, and therefore we only want you to tell us what we should do with this other issue. So it might be, we've agreed the house is going to be sold, but we haven't agreed on how the pension is going to be shared, for example. Again, you can't do that with a judge. Once the judge is dealing with your case, the judge has to look at everything. Right. You can't ask the judge to approve the thing that you've agreed and then make a decision about the things that you haven't agreed.
So it sounds like an arbitrator is a lot more flexible then, and you've got a lot more influence on how the case is dealt with. So one of the complaints we often hear, isn't it, of court is that you're out of control, you're giving up your power, you're letting somebody else decide, you've got no control over that outcome, you've not got any control over how that's looked at or when or where or any of those sorts of things. But it sounds like from what you're saying that with arbitration, some of that power you do still have, some of that control you do still have. And that can feel, I think that's quite important to people, isn't it? To feel that they have some volition in the process rather than it being completely out of their hands.
That's so true, Kate. I mean, ultimately, you are giving the decision-making process to somebody else. You are asking someone to make the decision for you. And for some couples, that's necessary because they can't reach an agreement. Maybe they've been in mediation and mediation's broken down, or they've tried negotiating through solicitors. But some couples genuinely just want the decision-making process given to someone else because they feel that that's fair.
Fair word, isn't it, Nadia? It's the fair word because a lot of people say to me, I'm happy to accept a decision as long as I know it's fair.
Yeah.
And that's that. So I think this does offer people who are really struggling to understand what fair is or to really unpack that, to actually have a decision made for them that they can both then say, okay, that was fair. And that gives people the opportunity then to walk away from a process feeling, okay, that was the right thing to do.
Yeah, that's right. I think so too. And I think that, you know, in terms of giving people more power, It absolutely does do that, because you are choosing the arbitrator, you are choosing the issues, you are involved and engaged in when your meetings with your arbitrator take place, and also what type of arbitration you have. And so, you know, if your dispute is being dealt with in court by a judge, in fact, that case goes all the way through to a final hearing, and that's pretty horrendous. I would hate to be involved. I mean, I've been a lawyer for 30 years. I would hate to have my case decided in court by a judge at a final hearing. You're being cross-examined in a witness box. I mean, it's everything you see on television.
I can vouch for the fact that it is pretty rubbish as an experience, yes.
Now, when you have your case arbitrated, it may be that that is, it's going to be more user-friendly, but ultimately you may have to have that type of hearing where you are asked questions and you have to answer them, and each person has a representation. But you can agree, between yourselves and with the arbitrator, that you won't have that kind of hearing, that in fact the arbitrator will ask questions, or that it will be done what we call on paper, which is where you put all your thoughts down on paper and then the arbitrator reads what you've written and makes a decision based on that. So you do have more choice, even though you're still at the end of the day giving a decision-making process to somebody else. You are more, I think, more invested, more involved in the decision-making process and in the process itself. So I think that's very empowering.
Yeah. And I think from what you've talked to me about before as well, you can, so when you, even if you do have that case on paper, you still have the chance for the arbitrator to actually engage with you and ask questions. So it's not like you've got to just be really good at writing it down. Because I know some people say to me, I'm not very good at writing everything down. I want to be able to explain it. But that's still possible, isn't it? It strikes me that the arbitration sort of framework is flexible in how you get all the kind of ideas, thoughts, evidence, whatever you want to call it, across to the arbitrator. And the arbitrator has that to and fro with you to make sure that they fully understand what the situation is. And you can then feel confident that you've communicated your point in lots of different ways.
Yes, that's absolutely true. You know, there are a variety of different ways in which you can do it. And ultimately, you have that kind of control, really. I mean, the arbitrator has to agree with you that that's the most appropriate way to deal with your case. Because, I mean, sometimes I'm asked to do arbitrations on paper when I know that there isn't enough information there for me to do that, and I will still need to speak to the people involved because I've got some questions I want to ask them, or maybe there are some things that I don't think they've considered when they've looked at housing or they've looked at pensions. But yes, there is a lot more flexibility and there's a lot more choice in the process.
So you've got this process then where you have effectively a private judge listening. You've had to choose the arbitrator together. The arbitrator's listened to what you've got to say. What's to stop somebody deciding they don't like what the arbitrator has decided and saying, well, I'm not going to agree to that anymore?
Okay, so I'll just start that by saying another advantage of arbitration is that in court, you get a judgment, the judge tells you the decision, and then you leave court. In arbitration, the arbitrator goes away. So generally doesn't give you the decision there and then, and goes away and writes up the decision in what we call, for financial arbitrations, it's called an award. For children arbitrations, it's called a determination. And that's a written judgment, if you like. So that then gives the clients the opportunity to read and take the time to be able to fully understand and analyse why the arbitrator came to the decision. So I think that's quite helpful. And it explains what law was applied and what the evidence was, etc. It's quite a lengthy document. We normally spend at least a week drafting these things. Now, when you agree to arbitrate, let's say Joe and Mary agree to arbitrate, Joe and Mary enter into a contract with each other to be bound by the decision of the arbitrator. And so there is a contractually binding agreement between Joe and Mary that they will accept the decision of the arbitrator. And so if Joe or Mary decides that one of the, you know, let's say Mary decides she doesn't like the decision of the arbitrator and doesn't want to be bound by the arbitrator's decision, Well, then Joe can take action through the courts to enforce the arbitrator's decision because of that contractually binding agreement to be bound by it.
And that contractually binding agreement is done right at the beginning. So effectively, yeah. The steps in the process are you decide between you want to arbitrate, you go away and research your arbitrators, you agree on an arbitrator, and part of the engagement process for agreeing that the arbitrator will work with you is to sign the form that yes. says we are now contractually bound by this arbitrator. And can you drop out of the process then, or once you've started, it has to finish?
Because it's an agreement, you can't without both parties' consent.
You both have to agree you wanted to stop. If yes. any one of you, so if one of you just doesn't like the way it's going and yes. second guessing what's coming down the line, you can't just turn around and say, well, I'm not doing this anymore. So that contractual agreement is really important.
As long as the arbitrator's decision is within the right basket of fruit, the right broad spectrum yep. of decisions, and it's reasonable for that arbitrator to have reached, then that decision is going to be upheld by the court. And the courts yeah. have been very clear about that.
So I'm a big football fan, so it's like VAR, there's got to be a clear and obvious error in yeah. order to overrule or overturn what's gone on the pitch kind of thing.
Yes, in simple terms, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you've got this situation then where you've got a more, I'm going to call it more user-friendly decision maker that you can have a dialogue with rather than just have to turn up on court and on a day in court and just, you know, do what you can on the day. You've got an engaged process. You're in the process. You've signed the form to say you're bound by the decision. What happens when the award is made? Because, I mean, well, lots of the time we talk about resolving financial agreements or disputes with a consent order. So that yeah. piece of paper that makes your financial agreements, if it's finances, you know, legally binding, or a child arrangements order, if it's a decision about, you know, the children and what happens to children. So do you get those documents in the arbitration process? So you've got this award. Is the award the consent order, or is that something else?
No, the award is something else, but many arbitrators will agree in advance that they will draft the order for the couple at the conclusion of the argument. It really depends. Sometimes couples have got their own lawyers, in which case their lawyers will draft the consent order. I arbitrate for people who have legal representation, but I also arbitrate for litigants in person. And then it's very helpful for them if I draft the order. It saves a lot of time and money because I know what I've ordered, if you like, or what I've awarded. And so they're not paying solicitors to go backwards and forwards arguing about the nuances of what the arbitrator did or did not award. And it's, you know, it might surprise some of your listeners, Kate, to know how much money can be spent after a court hearing arguing about the exact wording of the order. And
it's the sting in the tail, isn't it? The gift that keeps on giving when you get yet another bill dropping onto the doormat when you think you've already hemorrhaged enough money for a lifetime of legal advice having through a court situation. Yes. You make it that you get the spirit of the order, you know what you're trying to achieve, and yes. therefore you can word it in a way that's as neutral as possible without, you know, without undermining what you think is yeah. is being ordered, I guess.
That's true. I mean, the award will set out very clearly what is going to go into the consent order, but the devil is always in the detail, isn't it? Consent orders contain a number of things which are not orders, often things called recitals and agreements, which can trip people up. And so I certainly draft consent orders following on from arbitrations, and I know a lot of other arbitrators do as well. Now, consent order is absolutely going to be necessary for financial remedy proceedings, but not necessarily necessary, proceedings. In children proceedings, you would only really want to convert the arbitrator's determination into an order if there had been issues that might give you reason to be concerned that you know what the arbitrator has determined, that one party won't comply with it.
So we stick to that principle. We often talk about the no order principle, which yes. means that wherever possible, the court doesn't want to make orders for children.
And because arbitration is also available to help cohabiting couples who maybe have a dispute over a property. And again, you wouldn't necessarily automatically need to have a court order in those cases either, depending on what the arbitrator decides. So we've also got, apart from divorcing couples or separating couples and financial disputes and children disputes, we have tutelary disputes, so that's trust of land, which is usually applies to cohabiting couples, and inheritance act disputes as well, that falls within the purview of arbitration.
So with arbitration then, Nadia, there are lots of, it's one of the ways of coming to an agreement about either finances or children. But is it a way that you use when another route has failed? So let's say you've tried, I don't know, the amicable process of trying to negotiate, or you've been to mediation, or like you say, you've done some solicitor negotiations. Is arbitration like a tier two resolution, or do you have people who go straight to arbitration without trying to sort it out themselves first?
Yes, we do. I do. As I think I said earlier, some couples just don't feel that mediation is right for them. They've probably taken some legal advice, but they're nervous about the cost of litigation, and quite rightly so, and how expensive it's going to be to have lawyers involved. And they've found out about arbitration and feel that arbitration is the right fit for them. So I think it's both, Kate. You know, some clients come straight to me for arbitration. Others come via mediators or after the negotiations through solicitors have done, or after they've been found by the court. So can I tell you what happened to me last week? This was not as an arbitrator, and unfortunately it's not a happy ending to this story, but it is a very good example of where arbitration would have been perfect. Acting as a solicitor for a husband in a case, and we had a final hearing listed for today. So we have been preparing for this final hearing for about a year and a half. So it's been 1 to 2 years of litigation. And this couple have been separated for a very long time, I think getting on for 10 years. So their separation and divorce has been going on for 10 years, if you like. And we've been involved in court proceedings for, I'd say, at least 2 years. And today was supposed to be the final hearing. And on Friday, which is the day we booked a barrister, and we've had experts in mortgage reports and experts in this, that and the other, and updated all our bank statements and everything, and got the whole thing ready for this hearing today. And on Friday, when I was sitting at my desk and an email popped up from the court, guess what? No judge. So I immediately get on the phone and I find an arbitrator, a really very experienced, very good arbitrator who could have heard the case today. And unfortunately, the wife wouldn't agree. But if the wife had agreed, we could have used all that work to bring the case to a conclusion today, and at no extra cost to anybody. Unfortunately, because we couldn't get an agreement to arbitrate, all the costs which my client has paid, including counsel's fee, because he has to pay counsel's fee anyway, even though the hearing didn't go ahead, and it's not his fault, it's not counsel's fault either, he's going to have to pay that all over again. So I think it's going to cost him £10,000. Yeah.
How painful.
I give you that example because that happens all the time. It happens all the time. And I even had a case where almost identical circumstances, but the husband who was in person did agree to arbitrate. And we did manage to save the day at the last minute. And that case was featured in the Sunday Times, I think. That's why arbitration is a great idea.
It is a good point you make for the time that it takes, because explain to people who perhaps aren't all the way down this track then, how long would it take from starting from a first hearing to a final hearing these days with the broken court system that we have, the judicial delays? Roughly how long are we talking to get your case way through?
I would say you're easily looking at 2 years.
So 2 years. Yeah. And if you think about that, if you've got kids, 2 years in your kids' lives.
2 years
you're still trying to sort it all out. It's just, the cost is just eye-watering, isn't it? So it can take 2 years to go through the court system. And yet, let's say you want to arbitrate, typically how long does the arbitration process take, by contrast?
From start to finish. So, it's, you know, depends on where the arbitrator is brought in. So I'm sometimes brought in as an arbitrator where all the work's already been done and they're just saying to me, can you arbitrate this in 2 weeks' time? And I'm like, yes, I can. I've got a free day on Wednesday. I mean, I've got an arbitration coming up on Thursday. It's a similar kind of thing. If I'm involved from the very beginning, and that often happens where the couple are not represented, and so I'm helping them do all the things that a lawyer would normally help them with. So get their financial disclosure and their mortgage reports and their pension information, all of that kind of stuff. That takes time. So then you're probably looking at around 6 months from start to finish, though. You know,
that's... So 6 months, worst case scenario at 6 months compared to average case scenario of 2 years going through the court. It's incomparable. I mean, it obviously costs a lot less to arbitrate than it does to go to a final hearing. And I know it's too difficult to say the average cost because all arbitrators charge different amounts of money and all solicitors do. Therefore, to try and get an average of both, I know is pretty impossible.
I can give you one.
Go on then, do it then.
In my experience, because I can tell you, you know, roughly, I can base it on what I charge and what I know other arbitrators charge, particularly because as a solicitor, I'm often asking them, what are you going to charge my clients to do this arbitration? So in my experience, depending on how complicated the case is, how many issues there are, etc., if the arbitrator is just being asked to do a day of arbitration, that's what we'd be looking at. So it may be a day's preparation and a whole day where they're hearing all the evidence and making the decision and then writing their award after termination. Between £2,000 and £4,000 plus VAT. Now, obviously, there are going to be arbitrators who charge a lot more than that. And I doubt there'd be any that charge less. I don't think you could do it for less. But I think that's a very good average.
Contrast that to like going all the way to a final hearing.
Well, the problem with a final hearing, so I've just given you the arbitrator's fee. Now, if you choose to have an arbitration where you have solicitors and barristers involved, you're going to have all those costs as well. Of course you are. But the problem with litigation, if I take my example of Mr. X, whose case was supposed to be heard today, in order to get the case ready for the hearing, we had to update his financial disclosure, we had to get an update on the mortgage report, and we had to update property particulars. If we don't get another hearing date for 6 months, we'll have to do that all over again.
All over again.
Yeah. So it isn't just the fees of the experts and the professionals involved. It's the work that the lawyers have to do to have the case ready for the hearing. The longer a case takes, the more times you have to, you don't do financial disclosure once. You know, if you've got a case that lasts 2 years, you've probably done that financial disclosure and updated it three times, maybe four times. You've probably got your experts reports, you know, two, three, four times. At the moment with mortgage rates going up, you know, we can't rely on a mortgage report that we got 6 months ago. Or property values, we can't rely on a valuation of the matrimonial home we got 6 months ago. We need to get
affordability, can you? I mean, affordability is the big one at the moment as well, isn't it? With interest rates going up, people's affordability, even if they can get the mortgage, we're in a whole different ballgame, aren't we? Cost of living crisis, rising fuel prices, rising food prices. We're just, people just can't afford what we might have calculated 6 months ago. Yeah, you know, we get that a lot as well.
That delay is going to cost you money, and that delay is going to have you tearing your hair out. Because I can't imagine how frustrated I would get if my solicitor asked me for the third time to produce more bank statements, more, and then, you know, then my husband goes through all the bank statements and asks me questions about what I spent, you know, £57 in Asda on and that kind of thing. It's infuriating and tedious. And you will have to do it again and again and again. Whereas if you arbitrate and you can get that done quickly, you're going to save all of that, you know.
So in my rational brain, then arbitration is such a no-brainer. Why isn't everyone doing it?
I don't know. I agree with you. It is a no-brainer.
It's just like such a no-brainer, isn't it?
I
don't know.
So there are problems with gatekeepers. This is just my perfect. When people go to see a mediator, there are some wonderful mediators out there, and there are some wonderful mediators who are aware of arbitration. And there are lots and lots of mediators who are not aware of arbitration. And so when people go along to get their MIAM certificate or to, because before you can make an application to the court, you have to get a certificate from a mediator to say that you've talked about mediation. And that's all they talk about. And in my experience, what they're not being given is options. So I think the clients are not being given options by their mediators. They're not being given options by their solicitors. Why? Whether it's because they're still, it shouldn't be, but there's still a lack of understanding or knowledge of arbitration. Whether it's because professionals don't like moving outside of their own comfort zones. And so if I don't have any experience of arbitration, I'm not going to recommend it to my client because I might get asked some difficult questions I can't answer and I might look a bit silly and I don't know, you know, I won't be feel very comfortable and know what I'm doing. So I think there is a touch of that. I definitely do. And I think people say, well, why should I pay for a mediator when the judge is free? And not fully understand all the hidden costs of litigation, the things that we've just talked about, and how delay, you know, delay can ruin you. I've had cases where, you know, 2 years after a couple separated, the husband lost his job, stopped paying the mortgage on the matrimonial home. When we started the case, you know, good chance the wife and the children were going to keep the matrimonial home. Mm. By the time we'd finished, the mortgage arrears were so horrendous. The house was repossessed. And that's what happens when you have delay. It can be absolutely devastating financially to people's lives and it stops you from moving forward. So why don't more people arbitrate? I think they're just not being told. They're not being given it as an option. I think that's the problem, Kay.
Yeah. And I think there's a big piece for the government to do around raising awareness. And this idea that mediation is the only kind of pathway to getting alternative solutions just needs debunking. We need to give people lots of choice and lots of options because different people will benefit from going through different systems. But arbitration to me, I come at arbitration from a people have used the amicable service and in a small number of cases, people can't come to an agreement. And then to me, there is no better place to go than arbitration. Yeah. And I can't fathom why everybody doesn't just bite our hands off and go down the arbitration route because it's such a better process. Thank you, Nadia. Yes. It's been absolutely fascinating hearing all about arbitration. It really genuinely has. I've learned so much. I hope it's been useful to everybody else as well. Where can people find out more about you?
The IFLA website is ifla.org.uk. Don't get confused with the Institute of Librarians. So, Institute of Family Law Arbitrators. All arbitrators are on the website with their biographies. I'm also at Beckett Solicitors, where www.beckettsolicitorsltd or beckettltd.com. Beckett Solicitors, and you'll find me. And there's more information about arbitration on my website. On the IFLA website, there's a guide for the public and there's a guide for professionals as well. And we're just about to publish a guide for mediators, and that can be downloaded. And all the forms that you need to start an arbitration are also website. So more information about me and about arbitration on my website at Beckett Solicitors and on the IFLA website as well.
That's wonderful. Thank you. And of course, you can find me. I'm on Twitter at Kate_Daly and hear more about new podcast episodes by subscribing for updates and visiting thedivorcepodcast.com or on your favorite listening platform. Thank you, Nadia, for such a wonderful introduction to arbitration. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, Kate. It's been a pleasure.